Mr. Maven, Reel 18. Was there much complaining?
No. No. Nowadays, if it was in a civil sector like the union, there was grounds for strike. Because you had a national serviceman getting, shall we say, 20 above a week, and you had a regular getting £3 a week, and you were having to do the same. You were going out on patrol, you were in the trenches, and you were only getting paid half of what the regular was. And so, I mean, you kind of do the army, kind of just say, well, he should go with more than me, he's a regular, he signed on for it, I'm not a regular, I'm only getting half the money. But I never cropped up. I never heard of cropping.
What was the ratio then in the line of regulars and national service?
There was about 70% or 75% national service. And the rest was the hardcore regulars, like the NCOs, some of the officers. I mean, a lot of officers were national service. But there was regular officers like Colonel, like Marine, and obviously the Seymour, and Mac Bain, and all of them, you know, they were making the life, army their life, and they were regulars. And you had sergeants who were regulars, but some of them had been through the war, and they were, shall we say, the hardcore, and they kept us right. The rest of us, they're 75% of national service, and 2 years.
So the vast majority of NCOs and officers were regulars?
The majority of the sergeants, there was very few national service got made sergeants. They were made a corporal, a lance corporal. There was the odd one would be made sergeant, but it wasn't. I mean, in 2 years, it's,
there's really the opportunity, isn't there?
And, but no, it's 75% national service. And that went to the officers as well.
What did you think then of the NCOs, just talking about the NCOs in particular, what did you think of them yourself? Especially in the frontline situation.
Well, just like you and I. We just sit and talk and just, there's not like when you're a branch on the NCOs, a little thing, God, he's next to you and he can get shot the same as you, or he's soaking wet the same as you. He's got his uniform to clean, he's got his boot, he's just the same as you, only he's got the strike because he's that little bit more experienced. He's done the patrols, he knows what to expect, he's got a bit of common sense. And that's it. Apart from that, you're all the same, you're sleeping in the same bunks, you're sleeping, you know, no difference. And therefore, it would be a state line. But you know, there was no barrier between you.
Were you on first name terms?
Yeah. No. Unless there's an officer there, unless no problem.
And generally, do you think they were competent?
Yeah. No. I suppose I don't know.
And your officers as well. What did you think of them in general terms?
I mean, the officers and everybody that done the same training that we had, that done all the training beforehand, like, you know, coming way through, but getting to there, and never doubted them. I never had occasion to go and ask them for advice or like that, but I mean, they were there if you wanted any advice or any help.
And did you think that the NCOs and the officers had an important role to play within the morale of the unit, especially when you were in the front line?
Yeah. I mean, it was up to the NCOs, I suppose, to if they saw somebody was getting shell shot or something like that, it was up to the NCO to say to the sergeant, I think he wants watching, or leave him in for a couple of nights, don't put him out on patrol, give him his due rest, you know, that type of thing. It was up to them to sort that out. But it was done pretty fairly. I never saw any favouritism in the sense of somebody always got a cushy number. But everything seemed to be worked out as fair as it could be.
And the other side of the fence, no one was picked on, or bullied or picked on, whatever word you want to use.
You hear it, but I never heard of it. All the time in the army, I never saw anybody bullied or picked on. I wouldn't have called it bullying, not deliberately picked on. Maybe just somebody was slow at marching, you'd get picked on, and just get yourself picked on, but more bullying is what we're seeing.
Are there any that stick in your mind in particular? Any NCOs or officers?
No, not really. Well, Loftus was getting the MN. In fact, I can't remember the name of the officers now. It's that long since. The officers were like, National Service, they would go and you get new officers coming in. You know, there was a continual turnover of manpower. People going home to the mob, people coming out to take the place. But all through that, there was the hardcore, the regulars who were the backbone of the battalion, really. There was two sergeants, Ward and the drunk one night, the drunk old one, I remember them too. Ward and Farrows, I think it was. He used to get a rum ration.
What was the attitude of the officers, the regular officers, to the conscripts?
They had to live with it, didn't they? They couldn't make the best of it. They couldn't do anything about it. We never saw much of the officers, really, when we were in the line. Okay, when we were out of the line, we used to come down and, a bit more regimental and a bit more spit and polish sort of. But when you're in the line, I'm not saying it was go as you please, but things were a lot relaxed, As long as you kept yourself clean and your uniform clean, your weapons clean, that was it.
Did they come round much when you were in the line? Did you? You said you didn't see much of them.
You see them every day, but not on your back all the time. You'd manage, after you come in on the patrol, the corporal usually went into the company office, what was in the dugout, and he would give his report. Not a written report as far as I know, they just say, it was all quiet, this, that, and the other. And then he would come up and he'd say, right, lads, a weapon inspection in half an hour's time. And then the officer and the sergeant would just come along. And, are you all right? And that was it. Now, there was also some time of the day or some time of the week that you would put your request in. Or your nothing, like soap, toothpaste, sweets, cigarettes, whatever. And you used to put your note in, and then maybe 2 years later it would come up, and you'd get what you'd asked for. One of the favourite things was condensed milk. You used to ask for tins of condensed milk, and then you'd say, half tin, not like the big double tin, like half one. You used to punch two holes in with your bayonet and use the line, suck it out of one, suck it. And the reason I thought the rats couldn't get it, because they got bars of chocolate, the rats used to run away when they had the dog, put it up with a tin of condensed milk with you, and you just put a hole in and couldn't get it. You only get 3 tins a week. used to lie in his so-called bed and just have a sip of anything just for something sweet. Sometimes he didn't have to buy cigarettes because we used to get these CPAPs, and there was a tin of 50 cigarettes, and usually from players. And the tin with the top, when you push the thing up and turn it around, it broke the foil at the top, and then you got your 50 cigarettes out. I used to get sweets from the packs as well. And then you'd send some washing to get done. And it used to come back washed, but it was always wet and that. But everything was as best it could. That was done,
What about new drafts? How often did you get new drafts? And did they come in when you were in the line, or was it when you were...
Usually when you were out of
the front line.
Out of the front line. When you were on rest or something like that, just a couple of lads would turn up. Or a corporal. Anybody would say, go over to their quarters. There's a couple of lads. Then you used to go and say, right, they still could be company, bring them out, and put them in. And then you used to report to whoever was in, so right, well, you're going to tent the turn, and you're going to run the turn, and that's it. And then the lads just mingled in with the existing lads, everybody asked them how long it was since they left home, and what the thing about here, and where were they from, in the county, and nearly always ended up being the most so-and-so, because they were all going lads, they were all from around the county, they were all from the college villages.
So they were all local lads who were coming in on drafts. So you did your first three weeks in the line. You were relieved by
Australians.
Can you remember when that was?
May 1953.
Where did you go from there then?
Just went into a rest area.
I couldn't remember where that was.
Well, it was only about 2 miles behind the line. And it was an area which would be used by everybody. And all it consisted of just some holes dug in the ground, and you would spread your ponchos over the top to make like a tent. Or there would be some tents up with some rough beds made up like that, to explain what the pickets being driven in the ground and that, And you would go into there, maybe the Australians had been in it before you, or the Black Watch or somewhere like that. And then when you were due to move out, you always went round and cleaned up the area. Picked all the litter up, picked all the empty tins up, all in like that, and you always kept it clean. And then whoever was coming out would take over where you'd been and you went in somewhere else.
So was it a large area, this rest area?
Yes, but it was... the whole battalion would be out in this area, but you wouldn't be in huts, in rows of huts, or in tents in rows. You were spread out. It's a very mountainous country, and you're up gullies and up valleys. It's spread out, and I'll not say it was a half hour's trek from one company to the next, but you couldn't shout at them and you couldn't see,
So you were still in effect living rough.
You were still living rough. You were still...
It wasn't a camp as such.
No, you were still on your own. You're still in your own little world, your own platoon and your own company, And your company was devoid from the other companies. But, you were in the same proximity, but you weren't next to them.
And it was just the Durham battalion, it was just your battalion?
It was there, I mean, one of the places where we were, there was a stream running down the side, there was this hill and there was a stream running down, and we got some sandbags, and we dammed it up, and we all had a bath in it. That was the type of thing you did. Other times, when there was no string, you used to get a 50-gallon oil drum, big oil drums, get it scalded out, and put the top off, and clean it all out, and then turn the end over, and then maybe it's half a dozen of you would say, I'm going to have a bath. So you should go down to the water point, and need to get a jerry can of water, and come back. Then you used to fling up for who got the first bath, because everybody used to put, so we say, half the water in the jerry can, in the oil drum. So the first one in got the clean water. Then he would get in and soak himself down. Then somebody would pour the remaining half of his water over him. And then he would get out, and then number two would get in. And he would soak himself down, and the other half of his water, the last one, was getting. But that was the way he got a bath, if there was no facilities. No.
So, really, what you're saying, there was many facilities at these rear areas?
No. Or they would put a wagon on and take it down to the engine and get a bath in the engine, if there was transport available. Well, many times just went in an oil drum, and as I say, maybe it's 4 years, just went down and got a jerry can full of water.
What other facilities were there then? When you came out of the line and.
There wasn't any. The only difference was going to get shut up. The latrines and the toilets were just dug here and dug there, you know, primitive. I don't think there was enough in time. It was a rest from the shelling and that, and we got a night's sleep. As I say, got a chance to get a wash. There wasn't much.
And the bedding, I mean, as you described, was pretty much the same as your hoochies.
Sleeping bags.
What about food? And
well, the company would have a cook. One of our lads, it wouldn't be an army catering call. Just somebody who could boil potatoes, really. And we had the big paraffin, like a big paraffin lamp there. You fill this part of the thing up with paraffin, and then it had a pump, and you got it to go, and it came all the way along, and there was a big burner, and you could put a big cauldron of water on, or whatever. And obviously, with the heat up, so you to put the potatoes in there. Or how the chicken legs or it was you were having, and that was it. Or, you know, another one. And then you had three or four of these big things roaring away like mad, and somebody, you know, looking after the potatoes, making sure there's plenty of water in, and looking at the peas or whatever it was that you were having. And that was it. They were hot meals, you know.
Well, I guess you were getting regular hot meals at least.
Yeah. We were sick of chicken legs and that. You know, all legs, you know, the chicken legs and stuff like that. Potatoes, peas, chicken leg. And for a sweet, maybe some fresh fruit. A cup of tea. Maybe two slices of bread. And that was about it. Everybody complained now again. You'll probably John Warren. He used to complain, came over with a lad, but I mean, he was doing his best. He wasn't a trained troop, he was making the best of it. Because when you're in the line, you lived out of his safe packs, the safe four packs. Now and again, the Korean porters brought some hot food in, a bit like the containers have these days. And you went down with your mess tins and we're all laid out of mess tins, we've got many plates out like that.
But at least here, you were getting hot food.
Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned washing facilities and the latrines, which were pretty primitive.
Mm.
But again, I guess at least you could maybe get changed and washed. You weren't getting washed in the front line.
No.
Or bathed anyway.
Right now, no.
Mm. And what about your uniforms and things? Were you able to get fresh uniform?
Well, you could get a change of clothes, which would dry, possibly, you know. And I can't forget what we had. Maybe that two shirts, two vests, two pairs of trousers. You know, you'd be a deal.
Because you must have been quite almost lousy coming out of the front line.
You are. You have to get rid of that mug and have a smoke and that. But you kept yourself clean, and of course, when your clothes did go away to a laundry where I suppose they were deloused and washed, you know. I mean, you hear the prisoners of war during the Second World War where they were picking the lice out of the seams of the shirts and the trousers. We were never like that, because obviously we weren't in the line long enough in the same clothes all the time. And when we did come out, we got a good wash, and your clothes got cleaned, and that, you know, and then I suppose flea powder put on them and everything. You know, I never had any of like that in lice or anything. Maybe it's because we were out. And that was the one thing that there were, if anything, they were strict on the hygiene. You know, you were, as I say, if you thought you weren't shaving properly, you know, you maybe get away with it the first time, but the next morning when they came round, you know, stand closer to the razor, or, you know, wash behind your ears, sort of. But there wasn't many people like that. Only when it was cold, you had a bit of the ice to have a shave, and that, you know, that was a little bit rough. But,
And facilities, so they weren't that much better in the rest area
that you went to. No.
You were still, as I say, living rough. Well, what sort of things were you doing then? What was your daily routine? Yeah.
Well, you get up and have breakfast, and then I know you kind of clean your weapons all the time, but you would give them a good clean your gear, and then you maybe get some gloves or something. Well, maybe I'd go practicing patrolling. Practice and listen to patrols in this. You know, you still play the soldiers when you're out on the line. You didn't lie about and read papers out like that. But and then they are the same, I think. I'll have a bit of a square bashing. And you would do a bit of marching, you know. Not a great deal, but you were never idle hands, you know. And after you came off. After we came off 355 the second time, I got a stripe. They came round and they said they would give you a stripe. And I said, we want one. And they said, you've got to have one. And I pointed out that half a dozen people who were more intact to a stripe than me. And the answer I got was, they haven't got long enough to do. You've got just a year to do, just under a year. So you've got to have a stripe. So that's that. So when we came out of the line and we came into this rest area, I got sent on a course to be a Lancer, where we had to do some marching. The RSM got all of us. And we had to learn not all, you know, obviously kind of, you know, the stuff, and then you have to brush up on patrol and on this, that, and the other. It was fresh air, if you want, because you had to learn how to give the words of command for drill and that, you know what I mean? And I did that for about a week, and then I went back to there. I was in Templeton, and then the students, they never leave you in the same platoon, because you can have favourites, he said. So I moved in the 11th platoon, where I was nearly a complete stranger. It was the same company. There's 10, 11 and 12 platoons in B company. And I was in 10 when I got made up. And I went into 11, and I didn't know a soul in 11. So I couldn't have favourites, I couldn't, you know. And that's the way the army works. When you get promoted, they move you from where you are into another place, so you kind of take it easy on your pal.
And that was after you came up the line the second time, when you got your stripe after 355. Just going back to the to that first time you came back into the rest area, how long were you in that rest area?
Not very long. Maybe it was 10 days or something. Not very long.
And it was a sort of a general, well, you kept busy every day.
I mean, we needn't do it, we wouldn't put a passenger on a bloody route march or something like that, you know. Never let you have idle hands. You just made sure.
Was there much time for recreation?
Well, there wasn't anything, was there? You know, on a night, when, unless you're not, you start out guards, right? Because there were still supposedly pockets of resistance behind the lines. And one of the occasions when we were there, that Sigmund Rhee, the president, he let all the Chinese prisoners loose. He didn't want the peace talks of one, he wanted the war of one. And he wanted the war in the north, and he wanted to be president of the whole country. And because he wasn't happy with some of the peace talks, he let some Chinese prisoners out and ruined them up behind the lines. And, you know, so you always had to have a sentry, you know, posted a guard and everything on a night. But if, apart from that, there would really be a tent up. Where you could go and get some beer and cigarettes and stuff like that. But there was no cinemas or anything like that, no tambour or anything like that.
So what did you do to relax and
slip? You just talk, read comics, Dandy's Beano's, the Durham Advertiser, as everybody got papers or something sent from home, and
was that part from family?
You know, family would send stuff out, and of course, if you've got a paper from home, there's always somebody. Oh, some look at that. And there was always somebody in the paper that would have been a county battalion and all of that very local. You just read the papers, you know, and you got time and being able to stick it before. Bit of light relief, I suppose. And didn't do many reading of books as such. It was stuff that we could pick up and read for half an hour and throw away. I suppose we smoked our heads off. I couldn't get drunk because I didn't have much money to buy the day with. But next to the bottles.
So there was really nowhere to go, nothing to do in particular.
No. You had to stay on your area, the camp area. And
you were there about 10 days. And where did you go from there?
That's after coming off 355.
Yeah, you came off 355, 10 days in. So you went straight back onto the line.
Yeah.
So you had 10 days out of the line in this area, and then straight back in.
And then the second time when we had all that trouble.
Well, but I might mention that, but you didn't go to the same place, did you?
Not the same part of the 355, we went the left hand side. We went on the right hand side the first time. Like the companies were changed over, and we went on the other side.
So, who did you relieve when you went in for the second time?
Australians. We made the Australians.
So had they only been in the line for 10 days?
They hadn't been in very long, no. And then they would come out and they would maybe just be after 3 days, I mean they would go somewhere else the same. And then the second time when we came off, we went on to Yongdong. I can't remember who we took over from on Yongdong. But that's where the war finished. We were on Yongdong and it finished.
So how long were you on the second occasion you were in the line? How long were you in the line?
On 3 weeks.
So a similar stretch.
Aye.
And what was the position like that you moved on to for 355? What was that one like? The second time.
Well, taken over from the Australians.
Yeah.
It was canny because we'd been on it 3 or 4 weeks beforehand.
Another company
would have been on it, and they would have. The whole bloody Italian was everybody liked the one after we'd been on, you know, and it had squared it up, and we just sort of carried on improving it, you know. And they would improve where we'd been on.
What was the position like?
I don't know.
What Was it on the top? Because the first time you were on the top of the hill, weren't you?
The first time we were on the right-hand side, down the side. And the second time we were on the left-hand side, right nearly down in the valley bottom. And we had, I think I called it, John, it was 277, so okay, the battalion's on 355, and the Chinese are on 277.
That's right, because I think you said the first time you were higher than them, but on the second occasion you were actually lower.
Down on us. We were down in the bottom, looking down on us.
And I guess that made life a little more difficult.
And you know, on a night, you know, when it was quiet, you could hear all the wagons coming up with the supplies. You would think, I'm looking past it. At least they'd not be able to listen before. And we'd hear the wagons going and look at us, because there was a part at the back known as the Mad Mile, and it was open to shelling, you know. And the lads didn't have big headlights on, some little slits, you know, across the new road. But they did the engines going like this.
Session number 199.